Today on The Grave Talks, leaving the house on Pulteney Road. Another interview with Stephanie Boddy.
Before the clouds conceal the stars, and the darkness became complete. Before the waters turned murky and blood.
Stephanie Boddy's family had a long history of conjuring spirits at the house on Pulteney Road. But what happened to the spirits and her family after they left the property? Were the spirits more attached to the property or the souls of her family? Before Stephanie was born, the man who did the conjuring of the spirits, her grandfather, passed away. At least that incarnation of his soul passed this earth. Did he make a surprising return to the world along with the spirits he conjured in a former life? Today, we hear about the life of Stephanie Boddy and her family after the house on Pulteney Road.
The reason why I wrote my second book, It Found Me, is because it's very hard when you write a book that's based on fact, because with the paranormal and anything supernatural, that you can't make up an ending. You can't make a happy ending. You can't say, and they lived happily ever after, because it doesn't work like that, as you probably know. So many people got in touch with me and said, well, what happened next? So that's why I wrote the second book. The second book is predominantly about me and my immediate family, as opposed to being my grandparents, because obviously my granddad died. And soon after he died, I was born. Sort of around 10 months later, I was born early, and I was born on his actual birthday. My mum knew the whole way through her pregnancy that I would be early and I'd be born on his birthday. She always says it's because of this promise that he made, that if he died, then he would prove to her there was life after death. And he used to joke, I'll come back as one of your animals, because my mum always looked after her animals so well. And then she fell pregnant with me. There's 10 years between me and my brother, completely unexpectedly, and she just knew. She's always thought it, I am his way of saying, here you go, I've come back, but as your child. So that's kind of what my mum's always thought. And she sounds mad, but as I've grown up, not so much now, but when I was younger, just so many things happen that linked me to him. I think that's why I've had such an interest in him and his life and the paranormal, because much of his life was devoted to that.
Sure. Now, having that link, having, you know, the interesting coincidences, having the drive, some of the same, you know, interests, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Let me just ask you, do you that's what you said, that's what your mom believes, is that you were born on that day.
That's what my mom believes.
What about you? Well, I want to ask that question to you. What do you believe the connection is there, other than obviously him being your grandfather? Do you feel that there are other connections there that you have no control over?
Okay, so I'll tell you a couple of things that happened shortly after I was born. Mm-hmm. So my mum and dad got me christened, and at the christening, my dad took some photos. And at my sister's christening, which was 13 years prior to when I was christened, my granddad took the photographs, because he was a photographer. He developed all of his own photos. And basically, when he took photos at my sister's christening, they were... I can't think of the word, which is annoying, but you know when the negatives were exposed to light. So basically the photos didn't come out, and a lot of the photos my parents never saw. Mm-hmm. So my dad took some photos when I was christened, and he took them along to, there's a shop in England called Boots that get photos developed. And he took them in and he said, I'd like to get these photos developed, please. And they said, yes, gave him a ticket, come back next week. So he went back, and he handed his ticket over, and they said, one moment, we'll go and get your photos for you. And when they come back, they had two lots of photos, and they said, my dad said, oh no, I only bought in one lot to be developed. And they said, no, they said, we don't actually know where this subset have come from. And they're in a brown, envelope. So my dad took them. And long story short, they were the photos that were never seen at my sister's christening. They have no idea. The shop didn't know where they'd come from. Obviously, my parents didn't know. My mum was just like, she couldn't believe it. No one could believe it. And there's just, yeah, to this day, we have no idea how the shop ended up with these photos. I mean, some people say, oh, perhaps, you know, Dick took them there before he died. Maybe he tried to get them developed, but we have no idea. I very, very much doubt it. He lived in Woodford. My parents lived in a place called Sawbridgeworth, which is around an hour away. It just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And like I say, he didn't get them developed when he was alive. He couldn't. So, yeah, we just didn't know. We didn't know where the photos had come from. So that was one thing. As well, when I was probably 4 years old, my parents bought me a keyboard and I used to take it everywhere with me because I loved music. And then one day on the way home from, I don't know where we'd been, I was with my sister and my mum, I started playing a tune on the keyboard and all of a sudden they recognised it. And my mum was like, Jane, do you recognise what Steph's playing? And basically, my granddad was a musician. He used to write his own music. And I was playing one very slowly, but I was playing one of my granddad's songs. And when asked, you know, where did you hear that? I just said, oh, I don't know. And I used to sing loads of old songs from like wartime, things like that, very, very strange things. And then when I was around, it was just before my second birthday, my mum's mum was sadly hit by a car and she was killed. And I went over to the cemetery to visit her grave, which I've done forever. And I went with my mum and my granddad, and I was stood at the grave, and I was at the time probably about 2.5, maybe three and a half. And I said to my mum, I want to play with the children. And I was pointing over kind of the back of the cemetery. So my mum said, I just ran off. And my mum said, she looked at me and she said to her dad, can you go and check on her? And they were kind of laying flowers at the grave. And my granddad had Parkinson's disease, so he was very slow anyway, but he started walking after me. And the lady who was tending the grave next to my mum, she stood next to my mum and she said, sorry, I'm going to have to say, she said, but look at your little girl. And my mum said, she looked up and I had my arms out playing Ring a Ring of Roses. And she said, where your daughter is now, that's the child's cemetery. And she said, my mum said she just dropped everything and ran after her dad. And yeah. And when I got there, apparently I got really upset and said, you've scared all the children away. So there was things when I was little, I mean, that loads and loads of stuff that happened when I was kind of around that age, that made my mum think, yeah, something's not special. I'm far from special, but my mum knew that something, again, wasn't right, but yeah. You know what I mean, something was there. So that's kind of why she always thought that there was some connection between me and my granddad.
Do you have any recollection of these incidents of playing with kids that no one else is seeing or anything like that when you look back on your childhood?
I don't remember that. Probably the first thing that I remember happening to me, so my mum and dad bought a house in Sawbridgeworth. It's down this little cul-de-sac. And when she bought the house, the people who lived in it before her lived there, I think, for around 14 years. And when they moved out, they told my mum, they said, we're not telling you to frighten you or anything like this. And the sale had already gone through. They said, but basically we had a new fireplace fitted. And in the fireplace, we found a gravestone. And it's a gravestone of a little girl. And they said, we're taking it with us. So my parents were kind of like, that's, you know, all to their own kind of thing. So the first thing I remember was probably when I was around 6 or 7. And I used to hear people calling my name. Bearing in mind, I knew nothing about the gravestone. Obviously, my parents wouldn't tell me that. But I used to hear a little girl calling my name repeatedly. I used to tell my mum. And she, at the time, I just thought she'd ignored me and was thinking I was crazy. And then one time I got up, because it was in the middle of the night, I got up. And I opened my door, because my bedroom was at the end of a hallway, quite a long hallway. And one of the spare rooms was at the end of the hallway. And I opened my door and there was a little girl, and she was dressed in kind of like a white and blue outfit. She looked very, like, at the time I just thought she had like a puffy dress on, how I would have described it, with an apron. And anyway, I ran back to bed. I was, you know, quite scared. Mm-hmm. Got back into bed, probably hid under the covers. And things like that continued. I heard scratching on my window. I used to hear people running around in the house. And anyway, then I found out about this grave probably when I was more like 10 years old, my mum told me, because I was maybe sort of, again, around eight. And I was younger than that. I was younger than that. This was probably, again, when I was around four, because I don't remember this. But my mum and sister, again, were looking after me. And I went out in the garden. And I started digging the garden up, and my sister come out and said to me, Stephanie, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to help the little girl. She's stuck under the ground. And I dug up the garden. But I don't remember that. But obviously my mum kept picking up on me saying, I can see a little girl, I can hear a little girl. And yeah, just more and more stuff happened to me. The older I got.
Wow. Now, when they make me understand the grave mm-hmm. situation, they took
yep.
the grave, the stone, the marker?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, they took. So, yeah, so you know, like when you go to a cemetery and yeah. you've got the headstone kind
yes.
of thing,
yeah.
they felt that it brought them luck. And they said, we've been so happy in this house. We okay. feel like we've had so much luck in this house. We're taking it with us. And at the time, my parents didn't really think anything of it. They didn't argue.
Yeah.
You know, they just thought, you know, if that's what you've got to do. But when I got older and I found this out, I did research, the local library, and I found out my mum already had, she'd been told by people who'd lived in the village for a long time, that where my parents live, Greenstead, is actually built on a old pig farm. And there was a massive, massive fire there years and years ago, and loads of animals and children died. So we don't know, but from what I remember seeing, and I mean, I've seen and heard stuff in the house for years and years. Mm-hmm. We think that perhaps the little girl is the spirit of one of the children who was killed in the fire.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Now, I know we're going to kind of jump here with this question, and we'll go back mm-hmm. in time. But as you got older, and as you realized, you know, they have this grave marker that they took from another location for luck,
yeah.
essentially, was yeah. the conversation. It's not like you got the, you know, the rabbit's foot keychain at the county fair. It's like, let's take the grave marker.
No, exactly. Well, yeah. they just kept it in their attic. They
yeah.
just kept it in the attic. Because we've seen them since, but we think maybe it's disturbed
yeah.
something. I mean, you can't go and take something. She's resting there.
Yeah.
We don't know whether she was buried under
mm-hmm.
If they've taken the headstone away and replaced the fireplace, if she was buried directly under that,
yeah.
then, you know, you could be disturbing all sorts of things.
Sure. So when they moved or kept the grave marker, I just want to understand, this was from a previous house, and then they moved and took the stone with them to a new location, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
So my parents were bought a house.
Okay.
In Sawbridgeworth, and the people who lived in the house that my parents bought took yeah. the gravestone from the house that my parents now
okay.
they're still there, still live in.
Okay.
They took it with them.
Okay. Was there ever any conversation later of, let's get this grave marker back to where it originally was?
Do you know? No, I don't really know why either.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the people. I've been with my mum probably when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Seen them, and it's not really been bought up, but yeah, perhaps that's what was needed. But since I've moved out of the house, nothing's happened. My parents haven't experienced anything, and I mean, things used to go missing.
Mm-hmm.
We used to we found it was around Christmas time. We would put things down, like keys, and then we turned back literally minutes later, the keys would be gone. And in the end, we were having to say, can you put the keys back, can you please? And normally they would just return to wherever we left them. But things like that happened all the time to me, my parents, to my brother, my sister. And when I moved out, everything like that stopped. So my mum just put it down to maybe it was me, kind of, that she was I don't know, maybe because she was a little girl and I was a little girl living in the house, perhaps she felt a connection with me and that's why she was more active.
Is that what you believe? Do you think you were the catalyst that brought this activity out of the house or out of the area where this little girl may have been because of the relatability or just because maybe, you know, you are maybe more sensitive than others and they can see you and sense you and they know that you can communicate with them more than others?
Well, I think when I was younger, particularly, I think I was definitely very sensitive. It wasn't just her that I saw in the house. I remember one time really distinctly, I must have been around 11, and I was on the phone to my friend and I was in the dining room kind of at the front of the house. And I had a nephew. I've got a nephew who's 10 years younger than me or so. And he was about two. He was in the lounge with my family. And I was on the phone to my friend and Jake, my nephew, suddenly started screaming, really screaming. I mean, I've always been really close to him, but he was screaming and he come crawling out of running out of the front room into where I was sitting in the dining room. And we had a dog as well. And she come running in with me and I was like, this is strange. And everyone just carried on talking in the lounge. And as I looked round, like I pulled Jake in, like was pulling him close to me. And in the corner of my eye, I saw something move at the door and I turned round and there was a woman. And the only way I can describe what she looked like, she was very tall. I couldn't see her face to begin with. She was facing forward. She had her hair tied up in a bun and she was almost gliding. Like you could see feet, but they weren't really moving past the door. And as she went past the door, she just very quickly turned her head to look at me. And honestly, it still gives me goosebumps thinking back to it. It was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. And then I saw her, I had goosebumps all up my neck, all over my arms. And she kind of, she weren't walking, but she was. It was very, really strange, to the bottom of the stairs, which I could see from the dining room. And the whole time she moved, she kept her eyes on me. And then when she got to the bottom of the stairs, she just very quickly looked upstairs and just was gone. It was honestly horrible. But I've seen her there. And then the last time I possibly saw anything in that house was I must have been about 20. And I remembered I was laying in bed. And I was dozing in and out of sleep. I think I had the television on, all the lights off. So there was a very like gentle light in the room. And all of a sudden I woke up really quickly. You know, when you're probably falling asleep, you know, and you drift off and then all of a sudden something wakes you up. And I looked at the bottom of the bed and it was the creepiest thing. It was just awful. It was like this. It sounds stupid when I describe it, but if you imagine a leprechaun, so like a quite a little kind of person, they weren't dressed as a leprechaun, but that kind of structure, kind of that size. But it looked like he was running really fast and he had this awful sharp face and he was just running and running, but he weren't moving anywhere. And I couldn't scream. Like when I get frightened, if I try and scream, nothing really comes out. And I was trying to grab my breath and I was kind of digging my hat up because I'll explain in a minute, but I've got this thing where I put my thumb between my fingers and I squeeze really hard. And I was doing that to make sure I was awake and I was digging my nails in my hand and I managed to scream and my dad come running into the room. And as soon as he opened the door, whatever it was disappeared. But yeah, that was the last time I saw anything in that house. I was around 20 because I was back from university. So yeah, but I definitely was very sensitive growing up. But I never, apart from, I've done a Ouija board when I was 14, I contacted something very, very bad. But besides that, I didn't really go looking for it.
Yeah. As far as the, and we'll talk about the Ouija board and some of these other things in just a moment. But onto that last thing you had mentioned about the spirits, the woman and the short figure, you're not alone. I'll say that. I know you say it sounds silly and crazy to talk about it, and I get it. You know, we just saying this in at the local McDonald's to someone, you're going to get some strange looks. But the thing is, we've gotten stories like that. We of people feeling that exact same way, saying this is going to sound crazy, but it was like a leprechaun, or it was like the Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz, but it was, you know, kind of menacing feeling. And it's like, and people saying, I don't believe in, you know, mythical beings and things like this, but this is what it seemed to present itself as. So I just want to tell you, you are certainly not alone in hearing or getting something like that, or anyone saying, expressing that they've seen something of that nature. But what do you think, and this is just an opinion-based question, what do you think these other entities were in the house? Do you have any idea on the identification of who they may be?
Absolutely no idea.
No.
None. No idea. Haven't got a clue. No.
No. Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, obviously you wouldn't know, but I didn't know if you had any inclination or any sort of research on the house that would say, oh, well, you know, this woman had passed here or something of that nature. Or continue on. You said you used a Ouija board when you were around 13 or so.
Yes.
Tell me about that encounter and what happened.
Okay, let's give it a go. You cut out a little bit there, so I reckon you might lose me again, but let's give it a go.
Okay.
So I rounded up a few girls. There was maybe five or six of us. We went over to the school field and we did a seance, and I got a small white feather and I put it in the mud, put some mud on the top of it in the middle of the circle. And maybe for 10 minutes we sat there. Is anybody there? Is anybody there? The girls were getting very frustrated and I kept on. No, we have to keep on. We have to keep on. Anyway, we all saw this feather rise out of the mud, not by far, maybe an inch or so, and one of the girls broke the circle, and I'd said to them specifically, do not break the chain, do not break the circle. Anyway, she broke the circle. That night she got hit by a car. She was okay, she had some broken bones, but I think we all straight away knew we contacted something that day. We then went on to do more Ouija boards, more seances, more stuff happened. It got quite out of hand. We went over one time. We went over to, there's like a big kind of open park in Bishop Stortford, and we went over there and we did another Ouija board. And when we were about halfway through the Ouija board, we had the planchette that was moving. A woman come over and she said, "Excuse me," and we kind of threw everything a bag, and she said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to say something. She said, I know you've contacted something. So we kind of all kind of looked at her. We were around like 14 years old, so we didn't want to get caught. She said, you've got to stop now. You've got to stop. It's not good. It's not good. Anyway, we didn't stop. We carried on. It got quite out of hand, and my mum had to take me to see a priest. And he done some blessings on me. He told me to leave everything alone. And I'm talking now maybe 3 years after it happened. He said, never talk about it again. He said, never talk about what you contacted. He said, always wear a cross and sleep with a Bible under your bed. So my mum went out. She bought me a cross. That night I was vomiting. We didn't associate anything at that point. The next day I come out in a rash from my head down all across my chest. And it wasn't until I took the cross off that I started getting better. And then I had the Bible under my bed. I couldn't sleep at night. I got fidgety. I was uncomfortable. And I took the Bible away. I slept fine. And then maybe a week or two later, I started not sleeping again, and I just knew my mum put the Bible under my bed. I found it, and she constantly would do this, kept trying to put the Bible back under my bed, but I knew every time she'd done it, because I just couldn't sleep. And then when I moved out from home, my mum bought me another cross, and that night I started vomiting. I got the rash on my chest. Twice since I've been with my husband now, I've attempted to wear a cross, and each time I get the vomiting and the rash. Now, the house which my husband and I live in now, it's 120 years old. We found out since we've been here, we had no idea. I saw a man in our house, and we contacted the people who lived here before. We found out that it's haunted by a boy who died here when he was around 18 years old. The house is 120 years old, so the history must be wild in this place. But I haven't really I don't go looking for anything now. I would never do a Ouija board again. I would never do a seance, and I would say to anybody, just don't touch the things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do go on ghost hunts. I do enjoy that, and I do love hearing about the paranormal. I have a real keen interest in it. But the amount of times my husband and I, or, you know, a friend or my mum comes places with me and they get a Ouija board out, and I just say, no chance, I'm not getting involved in it. And I won't touch a Ouija board or a seance. My granddad, before he died, made the family make a promise. And I know firsthand why he made us make that promise. And I didn't take it seriously until I played around with it myself. And yeah, they're dangerous things. They really are. Yeah.
Between the time of playing with that Ouija board and, mm-hmm. and that woman coming up to you saying, you guys brought something up. There's something that came through.
Yeah.
And then the moment a couple years later where your mom said, we have to go see a priest and something needs to be done. Can you tell us about any of the events that led up to your mom saying, we got to do something about this?
Yeah, okay. So basically, the school I was at where I did the seance initially, I ended up getting extremely bullied there, and I had to leave. And I moved to a different school, miles and miles away. I made a new group of friends. And then basically I was I can't go into too much detail, but I was possessed at times. I had no real remembrance of what happened. Mm-hmm. But friends who I had, and I'm talking, for example, one of my best friends at the time, he was 6'2", didn't believe in ghosts, never had any experience with it, and was with me when something happened to me that I can't even remember. And then he came around my house one time with maybe two other boys and a few girls, and had a sleepover. I had a lot of friends when I was growing up, and my mum always encouraged sleepovers and parties and things. So we had this big sleepover, and basically who I contacted, I found a grave that belonged to who I contacted. Mm-hmm. And it was in the cemetery close to where I live, and I took my friends up there at around midnight, and I showed them the grave, and I said, this is what's been happening to me, and blah blah blah. Anyway, I went home, and the next day my parents told me, so probably in the afternoon, my dad had been out and he come back and he said, there's been a fire at the church, and basically the altar, that it was all locked from the inside, but the altar in the church had caught fire. They have no idea how it happened. There was no broken entry into the church, but just the altar area inside the church had caught light. And it was at that point my mum said to me, Steph, did anything happen last night? And I told her what happened before we went to the church, and we didn't go near the church, we were at the cemetery. I said I showed my friends the grave. Anyway, my mum said to me, take me to the grave. So I said, okay. And I went to where the grave was, and the grave was gone. And she said to me, I don't believe you. I don't believe his grave was here. And I said, Mum, I promise you, I came here last night. I've been coming here for weeks and weeks visiting. And we went and got two of my friends, and she said, take me to where Steph took you last night. And they took her up there, and the grave was gone. So whether or not the grave never existed, but we all saw it. There was six or seven of us.
Yeah.
We all saw the grave, and it was gone. So that was one. And that's when my mum said to me, and she sat down with Alec. Sorry, I probably shouldn't have said his name, but basically he's the boy, the friend of mine who saw stuff that happened to me. I'm shaking now talking about it. I've never gone into this detail, so I don't want to talk too much, but he basically broke down in tears and started crying. Now he's 6'2", he's a big guy. And he cried, and he said, I've never seen Steph like that, and I can't be around her if something like that's going to happen again, because it frightened me. So that's when literally the next day my mum took me to see a priest, and he said to me, you need to wipe it out of your life entirely. We told him what happened with the church, with the gravestone, and he said, you need to just completely try and forget that it's ever happened, and don't go near a Ouija board again.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I went. I was just going to say, I think I've almost blacked a lot of it out myself. I mean, because from when it happened when I was 14 years old until the moment that I was talking about then with you, I must have been almost 18. It was the summer before I turned 18. So I'm talking it was going on for over 3.5 years. Yeah. But I only remember snippets of it. I obviously remember what happened at the end. Mm-hmm. I remember what happened at the beginning. And I remember some of the phone calls I had and some of the stuff that happened in between. But it's like almost dark patches in my mind that I've chosen to forget about.
Yeah.
Often.
Do you, when these things happen, and obviously if there's no recollection of it, it's gonna, you can't recollect it. But from what mm-hmm. you are aware of, and you found this grave, was mm-hmm. when we hear the word possession, mm-hmm. people conjure up this idea that a demon got into an individual. But I know sometimes it can be essentially the spirit of a formerly living person, not a demon. But
no, it weren't a demon. Yeah. Definitely not.
So do you feel that this was the individual that had passed away? It was this individual's spirit who had come to you and essentially was using your body as a vessel to communicate?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Stephanie Boddy about life after the house on Pulteney Road. In part two of our interview, we'll ask, does Stephanie believe that the knowledge that she had of things from another place and time were a result of living a past life? Did it feel better to Stephanie to have a husband who didn't believe in ghosts? Or was it more comforting once he finally did become a believer in the paranormal activity that was going on around her and him? Does Stephanie believe that she may be the spirit of her grandfather reincarnated, and why? If a living person is conjuring up ghosts and retains an attachment, can that attachment follow that person from life to life in a reincarnated body? And how common is it that our soul or spirit is reincarnated within the family line from generation to generation? To get access to the rest of this conversation and all of our interviews in their entirety, part one and part two, become a supporter of our program. We call them Grave Keepers. For $5 a month, you'll have access to advanced episodes of our program in their entirety, part one and part two, and access to our entire archive of interviews over the last several years. Hundreds of interviews just waiting for you to binge away on. To get it, go to patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Gravekeeper. Supporting our program keeps us on the air and allows us to do this program that we love doing so much called The Grave Talks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, my name is Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Watching my chair.